football on off the ball.
I'd be like you, I'm taking it all in, whether I'm on Twitter or whether I'm on Instagram and I'm seeing a Troy Parrott goal or a Troy Parrott assist. I'm taking it all in. I'm milking it for all it's worth, because look, he's done remarkable things in the last year with club and country.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Koigig Pod on Off the Ball in association with Cadbury, official snack partner of the Republic of Ireland women's national team.
Katie McCabe, a huge, huge goal.
Very proud of the team's performance.
We're going to go out there to beat them. We're going to try and beat them.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Koigig Pod. Podcast. Cathy McNamee here with you, and we are recording this on the evening that Carla Ward has announced her squad for the upcoming games against France in Tala and then off to Utrecht in Netherlands to play them. Joining me to look at that squad and maybe a very early preview of what we can expect from these games are Karen Duggan and Scarlett Heron. How are we both?
We're good. No complaints. Grand stretch in the evening.
Grand stretch in the evening. Yes, I'm looking out here. It's about 5 o'clock and I can still see outside. So that is a positive. I don't think we were hoping for any like mad changes in the squad, or there hadn't really been any whispers or rumours of anyone making a last minute dive to get into the squad for these qualifiers, Karen. But you have to say, all very consistent, all very much to be expected. No representation from the league here, which is probably to be expected for the time of year, especially with people not playing. I did ask.
I would say generally, I think we've gotten to a point now where we won't expect that. Too many people are making the move to go abroad, and it's with the view of that being an important step to make the national team. So I think we can kind of take that out of our ether, unless someone has an amazing breakthrough season and it's undeniable that they should be called up. But in terms of the announcement, again, it's consistency. And I guess we should be happy with that off the back of two good performances. They've had 6 wins in a row and it's been a fairly consistent panel with the odd random Australian fly in or something like that. But they haven't proved fruitful. So she's stuck with what has gotten her to this point in terms of 6 wins on the bounce, recognized that we needed a change of style, and these are the player, or does the style suit the player? The player suit the style. I'm not sure. If she wanted to go back to a different style, we'd be thinking maybe that there would be a difference in the squad makeup. But given the 2 performances against Belgium, where we set up in a way that suited these players, and the positive kind of reinforcement that went around the team after that, I'm not surprised that there's no changes.
Yes, Scarlett, I thought there was something interesting that Carla said in the press conference today, and she was talking about that behind closed doors game in Marbella, which obviously isn't very fruitful for us as fans and pundits and analysts trying to work out where this team is at, because it has been a big enough gap since the last time we saw them all together. But she was talking about a very weird way she worded it. She was like, I learned that I didn't like something that we probably would have used. And everyone in the room was like, what does that mean? And that slightly struck fear in me because of when she came in and the way that she set up the team. Do you think that both her and the team, I suppose, have matured at this rate? And like, obviously she recognised it in Marbella, it didn't work, so it's not going to be used now. But do you think the learnings are there to make sure that we don't have any of those rogue moments again?
Yeah, I suppose when I was reading that earlier, I kind of was brought back to a few months ago when we had that terrible night in Slovenia. And I was kind of thinking, if she had had a game maybe before that to figure things out, would she have probably gone the way she did that night? That could have been avoided. But yeah, I mean, it'd be interesting to know, I suppose, what that thing was. I'm assuming it's something to do with maybe the way they pressed or the way they were building out. Like, I'm assuming it was just sort of a tactical thing. So, I mean, it's good that she
said
had
it
that
was
game.
An out of possession strategy, but she wouldn't go any further than that.
Well, I suppose if it's if it's a press that's not working against Hungary, I doubt it would work against the likes of France
Yeah, so what
and
we're saying is
Netherlands.
we're
So
not
I
pressing
mean,
high anytime soon, so don't even expect it, is what I
yeah,
would
don't
read from
even.
that. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fine.
It is fine. I mean, we have to figure out our own way to play against these teams. And if we go back to, Vera Power a few years ago, it was a really effective way of playing against big teams was to sit in a block of five at the back and to sort of absorb pressure. And that's, I mean, we're a nation that's known for doing things like that. So, I mean, by all means, if it means we can get a result against France at home, like, I'll take it, So if she's
Yeah, and
figured that out,
again,
that's great.
sorry, Scarlett, maybe that
No,
speaks to
no.
the makeup of the team as well, that us pressing high, does that leave our back line a bit exposed? We've got some really good footballers and they're really good defenders. Are they the quickest in the world? No. So why would we give someone an opportunity like that that would be easily exploited? So again, it took Kerr a while to get to know our players, but Scarlett, I think you're right. I think we can kind of, you have to take the learnings.
Yeah, definitely. And we can actually hear a little bit from her speaking earlier today about those first two games that we're going to play and what the expectation generally is on an Irish side going into these games.
Look, let's be really honest. If France and Netherlands is a World Cup final, we're all thinking it's a very good final, aren't we? Because they're going to be two teams that, in my opinion, are favourites going into. You would imagine that they make the World Cup. I think that you'd imagine both of them to be at the latter stages, if not trying to win it. So we're under no illusion. Look, let's be really honest. We're the underdogs. It's an Irish mentality that the nation loves. We thrive off that. Playing against the very, very best, competing against the very best. I think it puts us in a position to see where we are and challenge. And look, I've been at clubs and now here where we have to get the one percenters everywhere because we are coming up against some really strong competition. But look, we'll relish that and we'll look forward to it.
So Carla kind of saying there that, the two teams that we're going to face, if you saw them in a World Cup final, you'd be thinking it's a great final. I kind of doubt that slightly. I don't know if I would have either of them as World Cup finalists at this stage. Definitely latter stages, but I don't know if I would go quarter finalists.
Give France a nod for a semi-final of a
Yeah, I
Euros,
would
maybe
back
not World
that.
Cup.
But I think the point she was making there about knowing how to get the one percenters, so the little bits that we need to do, the little moments that are going to help us. When you look at that squad that's come in, you have the likes of Megan Connolly coming back in. There was a little bit of back and forth earlier today about the fact that Rusia was involved because of her lack of playing moments, but Carla backed her because she was saying, she's a leader in there. She's important when it comes to, knowing the team and being a strong voice in there. You have Courtney, obviously, as well, who's back fully fit, as we have seen, just signed a new contract with Everton during the week. In terms of the actual starting lineup, are you expecting much changes from what we saw in the two Belgium games with the team that she's gone with today? The squad?
I don't think so because why would you? I guess I think the it took her a while to get people on board in terms of media and stuff. So why would she kind of rock the boat in that way now? And certain players have really showed up for her. You think of Shiva and the performances that she's put in after people were a bit critical of her in the early days. So no, I can't see it. I do still think you bring up Megan Connolly and Ruaisha Littlejohn there. I do think we should just talk about them being there as because of their talent. I think there's enough leaders around the group to not have people there for the sake of being leaders. It's not as young a profile a team as we make it out to be. So let's talk about the fact that they're very good players because to me that's not enough of a reason now, given the profile of the team and the experience of the team to have someone in. In terms of the fact that they have had injuries and stuff and kind of consistent injuries, it is still an area that potentially we need to start blooding someone through in this campaign, so that someone is ready. Again, not to hammer on people's age or stuff, but it is a realistic thing that has to be negotiated, and you can't just think of the here and now. And I think there's a little element of that, as opposed to having an eye on the future. I think it's very much let's not rock the boat, not do anything untoward. I would hope maybe that there might be someone in that position to experience training over the week. I always
No,
find that
there isn't.
that's not going to
I
happen.
directly asked
Okay.
Carla that earlier if there, she was going, because she mentioned the likes of, Lily Ag being kind of on the fringes and a player that she was really keen to get back in. And then at the end of the press conference, I asked, are you going to bring in any young players to experience the camp? And she said, no, not this time around, but that she had been in contact with people over Christmas and it's something that she's looking to do later in the year, essentially.
Again, and we can't maybe judge that because there could be funding elements to that. Maybe it's not that, maybe it is that, but I understand why the squad just has to be the squad. But at the same time, I always do think it's a positive when you bring players in to experience the culture and the pace that you need to get to, and just soak up what they can from those experienced players, from the Megan Connollys, from the Ruaisha Littlejohns while they can, before that there's a big transitionary period again, then the age profile drops and you can't absorb as much. So now is the time to bring people in piecemeal as opposed to there being a big bang in a couple of years, which is kind of what happened there over the last couple of years.
Yeah. Scarlett, she was pretty, upfront about what our chances are for this group. Obviously, I don't think anyone's expecting us to top the group or come second. That third place is exactly what we're trying to go for. But she has like previously said that she feels like France are beatable team. Now, obviously, we did have that game against them, but the circumstances were very, very different. I thought it was interesting when she was talking about her priorities for the next few months, and we can listen to a little bit of it here.
Yeah, there's certain areas. Look, we had a lot of the ball this year, which Ireland as a national team haven't been used to over the, I would argue, the past 10 years. So, there is going to be an element of we've tried to do a lot more with the ball. We have to continue to be brave and try and play with the ball, but really making sure that we tighten things up, because we were exceptional, by the way, against Belgium, but we still conceded goals that we were not happy with. So we've still got to do some work defensively, and the focus will be sharpening up in both boxes.
So she's obviously saying that over the last year, Ireland have had a lot more of the ball, which they're not used to. They've tried to do a lot more, still trying to do more work defensively or have to do more work defensively, and the focus will be being sharp going into these games. I don't think anyone's expecting us to go into these games and having a lot of the ball being an issue. I think it would be the direct opposite, you would think.
Yeah, definitely. And I think we've spoken about it before, how like the massive difference between League A and League B, and how we need like a League A B or something like that, like a middle ground for us, like because it's the jump is so large and we go from topping a group to, maybe not getting the results we want in a League A against like world class opposition. So yeah, I suppose it's good to go into the games realistic, but also I did like her attitude of, on our day we can beat anybody, because I think you need to instill that in your players, because if you're in a camp that doesn't believe you can beat a big team, then, it's never going to happen. So we have seen them perform and beat teams like France before, so there is no reason why it can't happen again. But I think, yeah, managing expectations is important. But yeah, I think we need to sort of understand where we are at, and the opportunity we will get from even getting to Ligue 1 in the first place, it'll guarantee us a playoff, which is obviously the main aim of this next 18 months, is to get to a World Cup and to get to another major tournament. So I think once that is the main focus, we need to beat Poland twice. That is, I think, a must from these games. Obviously, that's not going to be a talking point in this window, but I think it gives us an opportunity to maybe build a foundation. I think even if you can get a result in one of the games, it would be brilliant for the confidence of the camp. And yeah, just going forward to build on these two games and to try maintain a solid structure defensively, and then try just build on that. So whether she'll go with a five, which I she probably will, or a four, it's how we then react off what France and Netherlands throw at us on the night.
Yeah, well, you kind of think if we could get over these two games with a point,
yeah,
we'd all be quite happy.
That would take
I
that.
Think, honestly, Poland is the be all and end all. Like, again, realism there. Those two teams on paper are a lot better than us. Obviously, there's always that hope that you can snag a result, but it would be because the other two teams have maybe underperformed and we have played out of our skin. And that's just the realistic nature of where those teams are and where we are at the moment as well. But Poland, full focus. And like you say, then Scarlett, we're in the position that we wanted to be in. And maybe this time last year when we were having that 4-0 loss, we wouldn't have thought that we could do that. So the positives are there. We just need to focus on the realistic ones. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we will have plenty more coverage of those games coming up over the next couple of weeks, because obviously the WSL is on a break while that all happens. There'll be player interviews coming from next Thursday across Off the Ball, as well as pre-match press conferences. I will also be at both of the games in Tala and in Utrecht to bring lots of content to Off the Ball onto the Koi Gig podcast. So you'll be, your boots will be filled with listening to us talk about this over the next couple of weeks. But for now, since that team wasn't the most strikingly interesting one that we've seen in a while, we will move on to what happened at the weekend in the WSL. And there were some fixtures, we have to say, over the weekend. Man City 6, Leicester 0. And then, of course, that astounding 3-7 scoreline between Aston Villa and Tottenham. But we'll start with City, because it very much was a bounce back game for them. Leicester's luck is not going exactly the way that they want to at the moment. I think you probably have to point out a player like Lauren Hemp in that game. The fact that she got, you know, the assists, created 11 chances, and then one player of the match, and spent her post-match interview talking about how disappointed she was that she didn't score herself.
Yeah, they're a different beast now, I think. And we said it last week that the Arsenal game wouldn't derail them, because they straight away, we kind of knew they had a settler, and that's no disrespect to Leicester, but they're at opposite ends of the table for a reason. Man City's firepower is absolutely frightening. Like, when people wondered if Shaw and Miedema could play together, I think now you're just watching in awe. And the two of them being served by Hemp, it's like, it's the perfect storm. And if you're defending against that, it's just so relentless, because it's not one way of stopping them, because Hemp is dribbling, she's crossing. Miedema scored a header. We're used to seeing Bunny Shaw scoring a header. They get, if one of the goals came from Leicester being in possession, I think Emma Byrne called it out in the commentary, it's the most dangerous thing sometimes playing against these teams is when you have possession and lose it, because the transition is just so good and they're so clinical. And yeah, they roll on, Man City roll on, and it's looking more and more ominous for Leicester.
Scarlett, like, there's no denying when you look at the players that Karen's mentioned there, you know, Hemp, Bunny Shaw, Miedema, you probably put Carolyn in there as well after her contributions this season. Well, I did see a few people kind of saying the fact that City have played so many less games this season is definitely giving them a bit of a boost in the WSL, and that they're not having to rotate in the same way. So they've played 22 games in all competitions, Chelsea 25, Arsenal 27. And obviously they've had one postponed because of the Champions Cup. And then there's also another game postponed at the weekend because of rain. And then United 28. Do you think that has played a factor in things? Or is this just a team that has really clicked this season and one that we've been kind of waiting to see for a while?
Yeah, I think it's a mixture of both. Like, you have a team like City who have been in Europe the last few years, and I suppose this year is an opportunity for them to fully focus on the league, and especially I think when Chelsea have, you know, lacked the spark that we've seen in recent seasons as well, they've taken full advantage of it. So I think it's full credit to them, and we kind of see the opposite on the other side of Manchester, where we have United who are juggling multiple games, midweek games against Atletico during the week, and then performing again at the weekend, and they're kind of just at a stage where they're scraping to get results, and they are getting the results, but it's hard fought, whereas City are kind of cruising. Now, I know they had the bump last weekend, but yeah, I think this team is in cruise control for large parts of this season, and I think when you have the front four fit, like, it's scary. Like, all four of them having great returns at the weekend, and like, it's scary if they all keep fit. And you talk about Carolyn there probably being in the mix. Like, I think she'd be she'll 100% be in the conversation for player of the season, because she's just had an incredible year, and especially when they have had maybe mixed injuries. We had Hemp out for a while, and Mita one was out for a little bit as well. So I think when you have all four firing, they're just unstoppable. So I think, yeah, the lack of games has helped that, but I think they've just sort of pounced on Chelsea's per season as well.
I think kudos to their manager as well. It does seem like the thing that we spoke about with City in recent years was the consistency, and not this week, but in previous weeks, he was referencing that winning mentality. And I think that comes from within the dressing room, so he's gotten that out of the players, which I think is what they maybe had lacked under Taylor a slight bit towards the end.
Yeah, definitely towards the end. Do you guys think that losing Hasegawa for the time that she's at the Asia Cup, is that going to make much of a difference to them? Or is this team kind of in a place now where they can weather that storm for the next couple of weeks?
How long has she gone for?
So I think she'll miss 2 or 3 of their games.
I think
obviously it depends on how far they go.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. But like, big signing over, and I know it's not quite the same position, but Grace Clinton was a big talking point as a signing. So like, I know she plays a bit further forward, but you can rotate things a little bit and bring someone of that quality in. They should have enough to kind of move things around and be able to compensate. Blinkhilda Brown, obviously she's in the England squad, she's very good there. Laura Coombs has a lot of, you know, she's got experience. So in terms of the matches that they have coming up, like, you're looking at Villa, like, they should breeze past that. Spurs and United, they are two big ones, but the whole thing about City this year is they have a bigger squad and they can afford to rotate a little bit. So I'd be very surprised if that one thing offsets the rest.
I think Sam Coffey coming in the window as well will bring a lot to that midfield. Like, I'd say that was definitely a factor when they were looking at bringing in players in the window, the fact that Hasegawa will be gone for those few weeks. So yeah, as Karen said, I think the strength and depth they have, if they keep players fit, then they should be grand.
And then a word on Leicester. Their luck just keeps going down and down. I mean, obviously, as we listed out, any team would be afraid to go up against those four players that we've talked about a little bit today, but they do feel like a team that's in decline slightly.
Yeah, well, the 15th of March is Liverpool, and that flips the script either way. Either Liverpool pull away or they get dragged right back into it after a couple of positive weeks. You feel, based on trajectory, that Liverpool at home should be favourites, but it's been changing so quickly that Leicester have Liverpool and Villa two games in a row. If they don't win one or both of them, I would say chances are they'll be heading the other way, but I'm too afraid to say anything now because I was like, Everton are getting pulled into a relegation. They're like on the
but
best.
But it does change so quickly.
Years, so,
you know, to be fair, we're not the only one saying that it does change so quickly. Susie Rack was writing about it in The Guardian during the week as well. Multiple podcasts that I've listened to have talked about it. You can't really say anything at the moment until, you know, I think this is one that's going to go to the final death. And of course, something that we haven't really talked about, you know, we've talked about relegation, but the fact that this year the structure of the table is changing, so obviously doesn't necessarily mean automatic relegation, depending on who does come third in WSL2 or the Championship, as I just still prefer to call it. So, you know, even if you do come bottom, there is still a chance there somewhere that you might be able to pull off a win in that playoff, which should prove very interesting when it rolls around.
Leicester, they played so well in so many games earlier in the season and didn't get anything out of them that I don't know if they'll have the energy to kind of start doing that and pull things out of the fire now. I think they've probably expended too much energy and it not paying off. Obviously Passmore was saying that there's a big month ahead. He referenced March as being that big month ahead, and he kind of put it on the staff to make sure that the girls are prepared. He's really positive about all of his players in his interviews. Like he comes across so nice. But yes, just those couple of weeks are just going to be so huge.
Yeah. Well, they're also a club that's been in this position before as well, which will hopefully serve them well over the next couple of weeks, at least to keep that bottom half of the table interesting since the top is pretty much all but done. I think if City win their next three games, and that's them hands on the title at United, possibly, I read somewhere. So that'll be a fun one for the Manchester teams, I'm sure, Karen. Okay, let's go to the other big scoring game of the weekend, and that was Aston Villa 3, Tottenham 7. Scarlett, Aston Villa have just absolutely exploded over recent weeks. You know, I was going back through their matches and different things that we've said about them and just reading the comments about their players. And like, I looked at the BBC rankings for the players, which are admittedly done by fans. So, you know, pinch of salt and all that direct. But, you know, the likes of Ireland's Anna Patton getting 3 out of 10 stars for that game at the weekend. You know, it's significantly bad for them. And their coach, Natalie Arroyo, was talking after the games, and the quotes are also quite dramatic, being saying that it was like being thrown in a swimming pool and not allowed to get air. It was cruel. I'm really sorry and disappointed. It's one of the more imaginative quotes that we've had this season.
I mean, yeah, it was a pretty, I think, accurate description of that game. Like, it really was a great game for a neutral if you're going to that game, because it was just the goals kept coming, and I feel like they all came in different flows. Like 10 minutes, there'd be 3 goals, and then you'd wait half an hour, and then there'd be another 3 goals in 10 minutes. So, really exciting game. But yeah, I think Villa just completely imploded. I think they're going to have to look at changing their shape somehow, because their defensive structure is just all over the place. I feel like the sort of five at the back, or the three central defenders, there's sort of a lack of ownership there, or accountability of, you know, if someone's in the box, who's going to close that player down. I think there's just maybe a lack of communication there, because I think Spurs were just allowed too much time. I think Villa just showed them a bit too much respect, and Spurs took full advantage of it. It's just, you can't give, you know, players that are on form time and space in your penalty area without closing them down, and it happened way too many times. So I think, you know, you're watching the game and you're kind of screaming at someone to even just put in a tackle and to shake the game up a bit, you know, to put in a big tackle, and you let them know you're there. I suppose it's a real old saying, but I think in this fixture it would have helped them out a bit, because like, they're really, really struggling. I think it's 25 goals in their last 6 games that they've conceded. So, yeah, I think it's back to the drawing board for them. Really going to need to shake them things up. And like, I know we're talking about the relegation battle here, but like, I think if Villa, you know, you wouldn't put it past them slipping into that area either, because they're just in such a poor run of form at the minute. So, I definitely think they're going to need to look at changing things up. The break's coming at a good time for them anyway, so be interesting to see what Aroro does with the time, and see if she changes anything.
I think you're right. Like, but I, in terms of the space that they give Spurs around the box, is ridiculous. But I think some of the players need to look inward as well, and that's not all coaching. Some of that, like, sometimes when Villa lost the ball, like you talked about the player ratings there, Kathleen, they were accurate because they were jogging back. You know, if you're a centre back, even if you think you're not going to make it, that striker is faster than me. You sprint back on the offside chance that it ricochets, or even just for optics.
Yeah, or a
Whereas I
bad
felt
touch or
like they
anything.
were just jogging there, like, oh, I'm not going to get there, so what's the point? And maybe there's something happening in the background where that's just the general feeling in the club, but you, as a player, should always take pride in certain things. And I think they need to take some responsibility in all of this, in their application of how they go into a game and how quickly they drop their heads.
Yeah, well, so far this season they've conceded 36 goals, which is the worst of any team. So I think Scarlett definitely right there about the potential for a relegation place is not totally out of the general realms of possibility, especially when you consider the fact that they have Manchester City up next after the break. Is there anything they can do with the player? Like, is it a case of a change in attitude, maybe a bit of a change in mentality, a structure change of some sort can actually help them? You know, I'm not necessarily saying beat Man City, but at least limit the damage and limit the damage going forward. Or is this a club that actually just needs a transfer window and some money thrown at it?
I don't know. They have good players. They have enough good players who aren't playing well at the moment. For something to be done in the short term. And maybe, yeah, they do need more support and transfer window and something like that. But as it stands, they're not doing the basics. And all of those girls are professional footballers. And we thought that Villa were going to be pushing into European places over the last couple of seasons. So the squad hasn't changed to such an amount that the quality has dwindled that much over the last couple of years, but something is not working in there. And maybe it is a thing of they're trying to play too much football and they're getting caught out and just the plan isn't right. But they need to show something to the fans in terms of heart and effort after that Spurs game. It could have been worse, to be honest, if they didn't have Hansen playing so well and she's kind of been their shining light and grabbed them a couple of goals that put a slightly better complexion on the scoreline. But, you know, I'm just very damning of the players at the moment. I think they can do a lot better for their team, for the badge, for the coach.
But listening to Martin Ho afterwards, I think Spurs themselves were disappointed that it wasn't more, that they didn't have a reflection of that 8-0 record win that they had previously. We'll move over now to Chelsea-Liverpool, two teams that have had interesting seasons. Obviously, it was announced last week, was it just after we recorded it? I think it was, that Paul Green had departed the club after 13 years, success including 19 trophies. And I think it was pretty obvious that there was a lot of shock and a lot of players that were paying tribute to him, especially of that kind of maybe older cohort of players that had come in under Emma Hayes and very much grew under her and Paul Green. And there's since been an article in The Athletic talking about what led to him leaving the position and the fact that the men's side were going to take over things and how there was a lot of unhappiness, it would definitely seem, around the club about how things went, especially because of the fact that he had been there for 13 years. I did think it was slightly funny that there was supposed to be a protest before this Liverpool game to kind of give off about the treatment that he had experienced from the club. It was organised by the Kings Meadow Supporters Club, about 2,000 members, but it was called off because of the rain. I was like, you live in England, we live in Ireland.
But we don't care that much.
Yeah, I was like, this seems like a very Chelsea thing to happen because, you know, the country you live in, you know it's potentially going to rain. Now, I think there was actually some transport things as well that potentially didn't help. But just when I read the line about the rain, I found it very funny. They did clap for him on the 13th minute to mark the 13 years to show their distaste for how he had been treated. But Scarlett, I think if you're Paul Green watching this game and you see Lauren James back to doing what she does best, you're not feeling too bad about the legacy that you're leaving behind.
Yeah, of course. And like the success that he did have with the club, I think we saw how much he meant to the players, just with their reaction after Chelsea released that very, very short statement.
I know there wasn't even like quotes or anything in it from them thanking him for everything he'd done. It was so bizarre. I was like, at least put up some sort of facade of caring.
it was honestly like something you'd see from ChatGPT, you know, write a quick 150 word statement to thank Paul Green. It was ridiculous. But anyway, I think we've seen how much he meant to the players. I think everyone's speaking about the Millie Bright, obviously saying that she was massively, but I suppose I think devastated was the word she used at his departure. So Yeah, and then I think Sonia Bambassador touched on it as well. So it seems to have come to a shock to everyone at the club. So it'd be interesting to see. I suppose we spoke about in our group chat in the off season what will happen. There's obviously a lot of players who are at a contract. Players might want to move on, and maybe things, you know, obviously aren't as happy as they were in previous years. But yeah, for Lauren James, I mean, it's great to see her back flying again. She's had a difficult, I suppose, few months with injury. So to see her back scoring screamers and providing the goods for Chelsea is something we're used to seeing. So I think that was great, obviously, for her. I think from a Liverpool point of view, things have obviously been looking up for them in recent weeks. And if we think about how they, like, I think it was 9-1 they lost to Chelsea a few weeks ago in December, maybe. So, I mean, Gareth Taylor definitely has improved things there. And maybe it's the Denise O'Sullivan effect. So we don't know.
Well, she's the major change between now and when their form has peaked. So I think we obviously have to claim that it's all the Irish changing things at Liverpool. But Karen, as Scarlett said there, even though it was a 2-0 loss from Liverpool, it wasn't a bad, bad performance. You know, it was probably what you would expect.
No, not at all. And they, you know, Bergstrom had the ball in the net and Haaland scored her. She made Hampton make a decent save, and they put themselves in the game, which was good to see. I thought that their shape was good. I thought they got back in numbers. But yeah, like you said, Lauren James decided to show up, and when she does, try and stop her. You can't sometimes. It's too much quality that you get distracted, and she just saunters into those little pockets and does what she does. And yeah, I think if Liverpool were to score in that first half, and maybe they could have banked down, it would have made more of a game of it. But like you say, there's definite marked improvements when you look at just the discipline and the shape and how they're going about their business. So yeah, I think that while Liverpool are still down there, if you look at the deviation between what was and what is now, it's very easy to pick out positives and use them to drive things forward. Like, this is the most successful team there's been in the last however many years, and we did X against them. Here's the good points. Let's apply this to this and keep growing and keep the messages really simple until the end of the season, and just pick up the odd point here and there, because that's all it's going to take to save them. And then they grow, and hopefully they get backed in the summer, and you know, more people like Gareth Taylor's done, like say, signed well in terms of loan moves and Denise and stuff like that. So I think people coming up from Championship as well would look at that and think, okay, they're building something here, they're growing something.
Yeah. Shame on all of us who doubted Denise moving to Liverpool. She clearly saw something.
Look, next week, the next time we record this podcast, we'll be like, yeah, Liverpool are getting relegated. Sorry.
Yeah, but that is the joy of having a podcast card. We can say whatever you want. Like, who was it? Like Joe Brawley or someone always had that line of, like, you know, someone gave off to him about being wrong about something, and he turned around and he was like, yeah, but I get paid to say the right thing the next week. So we'll go with that line of thinking. And if it wasn't Joe Brawley, whoever it was, I attribute that quote to them. Okay, let's look at Manchester United 2, London City Lionesses 1. Mark Skinner saying after the game that this was genuinely one of the biggest wins for them of the season, after they had that other big win during the week in the Champions League, 3-0 against Atletico Madrid, where they unfortunately did lose Melvin Mallard to injury. We'll get to the game in a second, but I did have to, there was one thing that kind of stuck out in his quotes when he was talking about the game, and he was like, to use a Manchester term, I'm absolutely buzzing. Is that a Manchester term?
I mean, I think that's pretty universal.
That's what I thought. I was like, I don't think there's anything particularly Mancunian about I'm absolutely buzzing. Talk to most Irish people, they probably say it, well, we can be a dreary lot at times, but when we are absolutely buzzing about something, you'd hear it quite a lot.
Oh, look, he's buzzing. That's the main thing. We're all buzzing.
He's buzzing, Karen's buzzing. That's all that matters.
I don't care.
Do you agree? Yeah. One of the biggest wins of the season for them?
Considering they should have lost the game, yeah. probably they made a lot of mistakes that London City didn't capitalize on. And again, you can say, look, they scrambled and they got back, and Tullis Joyce made a couple of good saves and they dug themselves through it. So in that respect, yeah, because it's a game that they definitely could have lost. You know, they opened up really well, good 5 minutes, and then your former player pops up with a really good header, and it deflated them for quite a bit. And Jess Park's goal was obviously unbelievable, but it was like a shot in anger. You know, she got the ball, Millie Turner played it in, she ran aggressively with it, and she just unleashed an unstoppable shot. And she hadn't really done much up to that point. So it's good to see that bit of grit in a player. I like seeing that. And again, for they had to make rotations and stuff like that. And they're using the squad, which was good to see, because that pitch they played on Thursday was kind of heavy and, like, you know, caused a couple of knocks to be picked up. And you don't want to be that team that becomes known as poor after playing a European game. So it's important to for a mindset as well that they got that. For London City, I think, you know, they were good again and didn't get the win. And again, just they're nearly there. They're nearly there. They're trusting the process, according to the manager, anyway.
Well, that's a great managerial line, trusting the
Trust the
process.
process.
Scarlett, Karen's totally right. This is not a pretty win for Manchester United. It was an ugly win, but that's what we've said about that great Chelsea squad for the last 6 seasons, that they've, you know, especially towards the more recent ones, I suppose, maybe not the former ones, but they were a team that knew how to grind out the wins, no matter if they looked like they were the worst team on the pitch, or no matter if they were making those mistakes, they were still able to get their results. We've kind of been saying it about United for a while now, but it does feel like this is the season that they've really matured into proper. We're now in Champions League football. We're now competing on multiple fronts, both domestically and abroad, and we're learning how to do that.
Yeah, and they seem to be really enjoying it and relishing it. Like, it seems like, I suppose the difference between Chelsea of the last years and Chelsea of this year is probably the internal sort of, I suppose, disagreements, or like the mood in camp. And I think the mood in the Manchester United camp, it looks really positive at the minute. Like, you see them doing the hair celebration, the cutting the hair against Atletico,
Yeah.
about the United strand, which was funny. That's their seventh win in a row now against London City. So they are flying on all fronts. And even like when Millie Turner gets that late goal, you know, you can see how much it means to them all, and how they all are obviously driving towards the same end goal. And I think, yeah, it's been a really positive season for them. And I mean, if they can keep building on results like this, and as I said earlier, like it's a lot of games, and it's something that the likes of City don't have to worry about this year. But it proves the character of the squad, and I suppose the resilience of them and adaptability. Like, you have the likes of Ella Toon, and you were talking about Mallard there, both out injured. Like, they're big players, so to be without them at the minute and still being able to grind out results like this when, you know, times are tough. And like London City, to their credit, like, I know it hasn't been probably the easiest turnover with Master coming in, but like their press, you know, United really struggled to get out with it, and they had coughed up a few opportunities from it. Just London City just couldn't capitalize on them. But like, they're a really good team. They're set up really well, and to come out with a win here on a what was a probably poor enough performance from United, like, you'd take that all day.
And also the timing of this break probably suits them as well as a squad, just to give them a little bit, like, obviously a lot of their players will be competing over the next couple of weeks or so, but it will just give them a bit of time to recalibrate and maybe come back a little bit fresher. They do have more games coming up over the next couple of days before the players go on international break, so they will have to get over those first. But things are looking good in the world of Mark Skinner in a way they potentially haven't always looked. Okay, finally we have Everton 1, West Ham 0, because that Arsenal Brighton game was postponed at the last minute due to a waterlogged pitch. Everton just doing what they need to do, getting those simple wins out of the way against the teams that they need to win against, and making themselves all that more comfortable at the bottom of the table.
Yeah, Yeah, like, and nothing better than an early goal as a settler, and he or she, was caught in the right place, got herself in the box, and I think that's a notable improvement for Everton. They're committing a few more players for her. They seem to have a bit more belief. And yeah, back to back 1-0 wins, it doesn't matter when you're at that end of the table if you're just getting that one goal, once you can keep a clean sheet. And West Ham never really got going. Courtney had to parry one over the bar, and she made a brilliant, brave diving punch away. But other than that, West Ham, they didn't hit their stride in the way that they had the couple of weeks previous. So, big win for Everton in the context of where they are now, like breathing space between themselves and West Ham. And these are kind of like, these are the 6 pointers, and this is what Leicester are going into now. They're going into those 6-point games, and Everton are, all but safe. They are safe now. They now have Brighton in their sights and London City in their sights. Like, if they stay on the trajectory they're on, they could realistically get to sixth, which is mental. But they seem to be really buying into whatever feeling is putting forward. He referenced just the togetherness and wanting to work hard, and it's kind of the exact opposite from what we're seeing from Villa, who they've just leapfrogged now with that win.
Yeah. No, Scarlett, it is exactly what we kind of wanted to see from this Everton side over the last couple of weeks, because we have our Irish interests, especially now that Courtney has signed an extension to her contract there. Were you surprised that she is sticking with Everton?
No, I wouldn't say so. I think we've probably always spoken about on this how we think that she could go and compete for a Champions League team, and try get, I suppose, that international, sorry, experience in a major competition like that. But I suppose for her, she's, I'm not sure what age is she 30?
I think she's just turned 30 this
Yeah, I
year,
mean,
or like in the year just gone.
yeah, probably, and I suppose her kind of your peak years as a goalkeeper. So, but I think for her, like if she's happy at Everton, she's obviously playing every single game. Like she's a leader in that team, and now we're seeing a change of form. Obviously, a change in management. I'm not sure if Scott Phelan will be there next season, but she's obviously content with what she's being offered, and I suppose their plans going forward. So, no, I'd say it's a good deal for her to be able to stay and to compete. At the top league in the world, and I suppose for Everton, like this break couldn't really come at a worse time. Like you have them getting 9 points from the last 3 games. It's over half of their points so far in this WSL season. So, like this league's all about momentum. Like we spoke about how big even one win is for a team that's struggling. Never mind three. It's just a shame, I think, for them now that they can't build on that for the next maybe 4 weeks. So. That's a bit of a shame for them. But yeah, I think we're starting to see the best version of Everton. So I'm happy that Courtney's a part of that.
Yeah, she just turned 30 there at the start of November. It's a big year for us turning 30. I'm
Is it,
putting
Jill?
myself in the category of international football players.
I love you.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, I think I said it on the podcast before when we were talking about Everton that this is the time of year where they look like they're in crisis. Up until January, February, and all of a sudden they just find a gear and they kick into it and they manage to make themselves relatively safe with a couple of games to go. So that seems to be what we're seeing from them now. But I do agree with you, Scarlett. It is a shame from their perspective that that momentum is going to be halted a little bit over the next month or so. It does feel weird going into another break as well, so close to the Christmas after just having that month-long break, but it is what it is with the international scheduling. Guys, thank you very much. Pleasure as always. As I said at the start of the podcast, there isn't any WSL fixtures for the next while because of that international break, but there will be plenty of content coming both here and on Off the Ball. So keep an eye out for that. But for now, the Koi Gig podcast on Off the Ball is brought to you by Cadbury, official snack partner to the Republic of Ireland women's national team. Thank you very much for listening, and we will be back with hopefully some exciting news of that international break very, very soon.
The Koi Gig Pod on Off the Ball in association with Cadbury, official snack partner of the Republic of Ireland women's national team.